Welcome to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Scott Davis, author of The Shift, The Transformation of Today's Marketers into Tomorrow's Growth Leaders, Part 2 of 2. Hi, I'm Nathan Ives, and I would like to welcome you to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Scott Davis, author of The Shift, The Transformation of Today's Marketers into Tomorrow's Growth Leaders, Part 2 of 2. The Strategy Driven Podcast focuses on the tools and techniques executives and managers can use to improve their organization's alignment and accountability to ultimately achieve superior results. These podcasts elaborate on the best practice and warning flag articles found on the Strategy Driven website at www.strategydriven.com. In this special edition podcast, Scott Davis, senior partner at Profit, shares with us his insights on how marketers can make the shift from being tactical marketing experts to corporate growth leaders who help propel their organizations to greater bottom line success. So now, without any further delays, let's get started. Scott, you had mentioned this just a few moments ago, and of course, it's throughout the book.
Yeah.
You talk about five different shifts that can take place.
Yeah.
Could you describe just briefly each one of those five shifts for our audience?
I would love to. So the first shift, and I've hit on this one a bit. Mm-hmm. I call it from creating marketing strategies to driving business impact. And again, I think too many marketers get tagged with building and executing against a marketing plan or a marketing strategy that is totally disconnected from the business strategy.
Yes.
And really, it's short-term oriented. It's focused on what did we do last year and how can we make a 5% improvement or get 5% incremental budget from last year. And it's really not anchored around the longer-term strategy. And I make a big push in the book that you really need to understand crisply and clearly what the business strategy, the 3 to 5 year business strategy is for your organization and what's on the CEO and on the board's agenda and how you can map the marketing strategy or strategies to the business imperatives tied to growth.
Okay.
And that's what the first shift is all about. And I talk about a number of mechanisms to help you get there and how you can start to engage in a different type of dialogue with the CEO and the C-suite and the board. And the argument I make, at the end of the day is that if you think about what the CEO and the board are discussing at those quarterly meetings where they're getting an update on the performance of the company, you know, they're talking about 5 or 6 or 7 broad areas. And I'll bucket them in these five categories. One, how do we increase shareholder value?
Mm-hmm.
Two, how do we drive smarter, more efficient growth? Three, how do we improve operational efficiency in the organization? Four, how do we continue to inspire our talent base to deliver the best products, experiences, and the like? And then fifth, how do we continue to transform/reinvent our business over time and continue to maintain relevancy?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And I make a big argument in the book that there are a number of different ways that marketing could engage under each of those five board-level growth agenda initiatives that would make total sense for marketing to lead the conversation or at least co-drive or co-architect it. And mm-hmm. so in a lot of ways, getting your arms around the longer-term strategy may in fact mean you have to help drive the longer-term strategy.
Okay. Okay.
So that's the first shift, Nathan. And that to me is the most important, is once you could break free, and I mentioned this before, break free of this idea, stop talking about marketing budgets, stop talking about marketing strategies, and start talking about the growth budget and the growth strategy, you've already repositioned marketing dramatically within your organization.
Yeah, the first shift really struck me as being foundational to everything else.
Totally agree. I think if you can't move on the first shift, it's the other four shifts. I don't want to say that they're still really critical, but I don't think the profile of the marketer totally changes, and I'm not totally sure the 24-month issue changes.
Okay. All right. Okay.
The second shift, and I'll go through these at a little quicker pace, but the second shift is this idea from controlling the message, which is what marketers traditionally do. We push messages and we push products and we push our points of view out to the marketplace to what I call galvanizing your network. And the point here, as I mentioned earlier, we've moved to what I would call the third era of marketing. We've moved way beyond, obviously, one- and two-way communications, and we're in this kind of hyper-connected, multimedia, multi-touchpoint world that marketers are struggling to figure out how to navigate.
Yes.
And the reality is all these touch points and different ways of communicating all surrounding our brand are really influencing whether or not our brand is resonating and has relevance or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so the point of the second shift is, how do you help your organization move from these four, from controlling to influencing, from pushing your product and your message to pulling consumers in through a network, through communication, which is traditionally what marketing does, to truly engaging the customer and the different stakeholders and having them participate in your brand, and then from kind of a closed conversation where the company shares what it wants to share and doesn't share the rest, to a truly open, transparent, authentic, different type of conversation with consumers and customers, because they're going to have it whether you want to engage or not.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so you see it. Apple's a great example of one. It's an easy one to pick. Google's a great example. Obama and the Obama campaign was another great example of influencing and building the network to ultimately drive the customer/consumer decision.
Yeah, I keep studying how President Obama did all of his different communication channels, and I just continue to learn just so much because of his effectiveness in using all of these different communication mechanisms.
Nathan, it's brilliant. You know, you wonder how much of that was planned versus evolved, but it's as you look back, it's one of the best brand and business building strategies that I've seen unfold in a long time.
Oh yeah, and I just think about him, and I know we refer to Ronald Reagan as the great communicator.
Yep.
And I look at what just happened, and I go, wow, well, I think we've redefined what a great communicator is or how they communicate. It's just phenomenal.
And so I don't think you and I will ever see Time's Man of the Year and Ad Age's and Brand Week's Brand of the Year being the exact same in our lifetime.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just phenomenal. Just phenomenal.
So the third shift is this idea, and you mentioned it earlier, and I agree with this. I call it from incremental improvements to pervasive innovation. And I try to make a strong argument in here that there is no one in the organization better suited to understand how to grow the brand through new products, new services, new experiences, new business models, new channels of distribution, et cetera, than the marketer.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is, within most organizations, marketing is at best a partner in crime, but in a lot of organizations, they are a bystander, or something gets thrown over the transom to them that's been developed by the brand team or by the engineers or the R&D guys, and they basically say, go figure out how to build a brand and market this.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so I'm a big believer that we have an opportunity as marketers to step up and again, reposition ourselves as true catalysts for innovation within our respective organizations. Because again, if you buy into this idea that there's nobody in the organization deeper in customer intimacy and industry and competitor and broader macroeconomic trends, who, if you buy into the second shift, really understand how to leverage the power of their network and,
sure.
and you know, do what IBM does so well and P&G does so well, go to the outside for new ideas and new initiatives. That somebody that has a real integrated perspective, and as I mentioned earlier, can work horizontally and vertically,
mm-hmm.
and again is somebody that can lead the organization in a very credible way in building what I would call a customer-centric mindset. If you buy all that, then there's no reason that a marketer cannot be at least a co-driver of innovation and help the company think about innovating in really big ways, reinventing the business model ways.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So then the fourth shift is this one's also a little controversial as I've described this to some marketing executives. I call it from managing marketing investments to inspiring marketing excellence. And I would argue as marketers, we've actually done a pretty good job at figuring out how to measure ROI on sponsorships. And, you know, I think about J&J, and I think about P&G and Nationwide. And a lot of companies do a great job at managing the ROI on their marketing investments, again, from sponsorships to advertising to direct mail to even online.
Sure.
What I see a number of companies not doing as well, where I think there's a big opportunity, is making trade-offs between, if you think about Phil Kotler's four Ps, and this is the reason I asked Phil, and he was very gracious to write the foreword for the book. I'm a big believer that marketers have to think about all four Ps, and we generally think only about promotion and all the kind of marcom activities. We're not thinking about the place, the channel. We're not thinking about pricing. We're not thinking, as we just talked about, products and innovation. And I think the day that we get to the point, Chris Gibson, the CMO of United Healthcare, made this point, the day we could selflessly make trade-offs in fighting for sponsorship versus fighting for adding 25 additional sales reps in the Western region is the day we've actually started to transform what marketing is all about.
Absolutely.
Because we're not fighting for our own agenda. We're fighting for the agenda for the organization.
Yes.
So this shift is all about really stepping it up a notch in terms of not just thinking about our marketing investments, but again, it's really thinking about our growth investments and how do we make the right types of trade-offs.
Yeah. I saw this very much like when I talk with my clients is when the executive team sits in a room, they shouldn't be arguing for their particular function, but rather we need to take the broader picture, the broader look, and support what's best for the company, which may mean I give up something.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, Nathan. The days of grandstanding for your agenda, what's in your budget, the tactics that you have planned for Q4, I think is the day you become that 24-month CMO. And I'm not really thinking across the entire organization.
Mm-hmm.
And so and I suggest a lot of tips for how marketers could start to make this move. And then the fifth shift is also kind of interesting. I talk about from an operational focus to a relentless customer focus. And the way I describe this shift is that most organizations end up going to market the way that they are organized.
Mm-hmm.
So they have an org chart, they have a hierarchy, they have business units separated in what seems to be logical ways for their customers and the different segments of the market that they're going after. Yet rarely does a company sit back and understand how the customer wants to experience the organization and how to organize the company around the customer as opposed to around the org chart.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying not to be too extreme with this shift, but the number of clients I have been in, and Fortune 10 clients that you and everybody listening to this would know, where we visited customers of theirs and they almost laughingly took out, you know, 20 to 25 business cards of sales reps that had visited them in the last month from the exact same organization, none of them knowing the other had visited.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's because we live in a world where we are driven by the P&L and the business unit we live in and what the results are our business unit head is looking for, as opposed to a world in which, if I'm in healthcare where my whole goal is to help the hospital be more successful, not just the surgery department, for instance.
Yes.
And so it's really getting your arms around what your customer's growth agenda is and how they want to do business with you and how do you work with them more effectively.
Yeah. I'm embarrassed to admit I can attest to having experience where a client actually showed me, what did you know all these other folks from your organization called, and I did not. But this gets to a point that you and I had talked about before we started the show. I've already used this piece of your insight in my own work just yesterday, because I found a client I'm working with was very focused on their internal work structure and becoming more efficient for them.
Right, right.
And not thinking about what the customer needed and how they needed to organize and be customer facing to support ease of the customer interacting with them.
Well, and I don't know if this is the case with the company you were working with, but at the end of the day, these customers actually want to do more business with you.
Yeah.
They have more share of wallet to give to you if you figure it out, and they're willing to become advocates and fans and have deep loyalty for your organization if you better match with what they're looking for and how they want to do business with you. And they'll pay for it. You
know? Oh, yes. Yeah, they'll pay a premium for it.
They'll pay a premium for it.
Yeah.
And that gets back to the whole idea of, are you building a brand-driven business, which, again, customers own the brand, or are you building an operationally efficient organization? And they're two very different mindsets. And I argue that marketing can play a strong role here, again, coming from a outside-in perspective and helping the organization basically take a view of the customer looking inside the organization and what does the customer see.
Yes.
And what does the customer experience when they're dealing with you? And importantly, the mirror image of that, what does the customer actually want? You know, what does a world-class customer experience look like that you could start to map your organization's go-to-market approach to how the customer actually wants to do business with you?
Okay. All right. Now, Scott, we talked about the first shift, the moving from creating marketing strategies to driving business impacts as being foundational.
Yeah.
I was wondering, with the other four, are these something that need to be done or shifts that need to be made in sequence, or can they be done in different orders or in parallel with each other?
So I would argue to your earlier point, if we're really going to make the shift, and visionary marketers is our aspiration, that's kind of the North Star, and we may be just tacticians today, the first shift is mandatory. And I think the more ways you can think of bringing that shift to life, the more not just leeway, but the more permission you're going to be given to help really drive growth in the organization. So I think that's the door opener for making the macro shift.
Okay.
In a micro way, I would say that the fourth shift, managing marketing investments, inspiring marketing excellence, from my perspective, that is just part of the job of a good marketer. So
okay.
That is something you should be doing every single day, and if you're expansive enough in your thinking and you can move to marketing excellence and you could make trade-offs across the four P's, wow, you've really stepped it up. But at a minimum, shift four has to become part of just the marketer's toolkit. I would argue two and three can be done in parallel. And if you again, I mentioned IBM earlier, P&G earlier, you know, they're looking for two-thirds of their ideas. Google's another great example of two-thirds of their ideas, improvements, innovations coming from external sources. So my belief is if you could actually figure out how to manage and leverage this network around you, you could actually drive the innovation agenda, and they become a bit circular with one another, the second
sure.
and third shifts. And ultimately, as you can imagine, I think the fifth shift is the hardest. I think it's the last. I think if you've gone through the first four shifts and you've had success there, you have got permission from the CEO, the C-suite, and the board to kind of offer up suggestions about how, I don't want to say a reorg, I don't want to
sure.
say transformation, those are much bigger words, but a really different model for how to go to market and how to do business with your customers.
Okay. All right. Now, throughout our conversation, we've talked a lot about customer data. Yep. And we've talked about the closeness the CMO is to that data and the positioning that that individual has because of it. Do you see certain key pieces of customer data or information points that are more important than others that the CMO has to have to drive the growth agenda?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think there's, you know, the days of getting the brand equity tracking studies and the different, you know, awareness studies and the like, I think those days of leveraging that data and finding any use in that, to be perfectly candid with you, are gone.
Sure. Okay.
I think we need to move to a different model of what we're measuring and what we're trying to ultimately manage and have an impact on. And I talk to many of my clients that have 100% awareness in the marketplace, yet they continue to measure awareness when really the issue with their brand or their company or their product or service might be they can't get into the consideration set. You know, I'm aware of your brand, but I'm not one of the five cars that you're considering. Well, why? There's generally reasons why, even though they're aware of you, they're not considering you. Then there's different metrics and measures that could help you understand awareness to consideration. Then there's consideration to preference.
Okay.
And that is where I find most companies have a breakdown. I find that most companies can get into that consideration set. There's three or five that the customer's considering, and they lose it when they move to preference. And generally, there's some three or four critical reasons why they haven't been able to move from consideration to preference. And I would spend a ton of my measurement and management time on those four to five key drivers, whether it's customer service oriented, whether it's better value for the dollar, whether it's having sales reps that are more knowledgeable, whatever those inhibitors are, or we call them bottlenecks, are moving from consideration to preference, have to be measured and monitored on a regular basis, because I have a strong belief that once you hit preference and you're in the preference set, I prefer this brand, there's a large likelihood that you're going to purchase that brand, and if it's a good experience, there's a large likelihood that you're going to have loyalty to that brand.
Okay.
So again, there is those measures that start to give you directional feedback and data on what you could be doing in the near term. And then I do believe that still managing and measuring brand equity over time in concert, some more of the attitudes, in concert with some of this behavioral data, I think the two go hand in hand to really give you some compelling information about building the brand and generating demand at the exact same time. And that's something brand and demand is, I talk to my clients a lot about.
Okay. Well, and one of the things too, since we're talking about measurement, is I find that if I want to gain credibility with someone, and I see this, of course, amongst my executive clients too, is they have to be able to demonstrate quantitatively that they're actually impacting the bottom line.
Yep.
Do you see for our visionary CMOs some key marketing metrics that they use that they can then demonstrate that, hey, I'm impacting in a very positive way the bottom line results of our organization?
Yeah, I mean, I think they tether themselves to the metrics that the organization is measuring to ultimately drive shareholder value. So they are finding ways to link themselves into obviously top line and margin growth. They're finding their ways into ROI discussions. They're finding their ways into share of wallet discussions.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're metrics that are much more oriented around shareholder value and what the CEO would talk about to Wall Street and the board than they are what marketing would talk about to other marketers. So what I find is if share of wallet or same-store comp sales for a retailer is the end game that a CEO wants to talk about to the board and to Wall Street, mm-hmm. then as a marketer, I need to back up and figure out what is driving either same-store comp sales or share of wallet that I'm actually influencing. And every measure I am looking at today is directly correlated to the things that the CEO wants to talk about, not the things that marketing wants to talk about.
Okay.
Very, very different mindset, a very linear way of kind of linking what marketers generally measure to what the CEO wants to measure, and we have to help them actually bridge that gap.
Okay. All right. Scott, just as a last question, just to kind of tie everything together.
Yep.
I think from our conversation, you know, our audience is coming to appreciate that making these shifts is not going to be an easy task or an easy undertaking. So if we could just kind of wrap it all together and just to highlight for them, if I'm a CMO, what is the overall motivation, the what's in it for me as the CMO to actually embark on this journey? And then from a big picture, kind of the same question, if I'm selling this to my fellow executives and the CEO, what's in it for our organization for us to embark on the journey?
So I think that's a great question, Nathan. So I think there's three major payoffs that this shift enables. And the first is the payoff for the marketer. I think marketers are under fire and under siege like they've never been before. And mm-hmm. I think the opportunity to change the dialogue and have a different type of profile, a different type of perspective, and a different brand of what marketing really does for the organization, and the idea that their job could actually be more fulfilling and more linked to the company's overall performance, I think for a marketer's nirvana. Because when you get mm-hmm. When you get to be a CMO, where do you really go next?
Yeah.
And what I'm seeing, which I love, is I could give you a dozen CMOs that have become CEOs.
Okay.
And that to me is a very exciting shift, quote unquote, for marketers that are really looking to change the game and really kind of turbocharge and energize their careers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the shift allows that and allows them to participate in ways they just haven't been able to in many organizations before.
Absolutely.
Second, I think there's just a massive payoff for the company. I think I believe marketing is an under-leveraged, underutilized asset within most organizations that lives in a silo that, again, doesn't get to eat at the grown-up table, that you have to eat at the kids' table.
Sure.
And I think, on the one hand, on the other hand, companies are longing for organic growth. They're longing for figuring out ways to get more out of the investments that they've already made. And they're longing for somebody to step up and help them make sense of all of kind of the fragmentation of messages and competitors and offerings and all of that to help them make sense of it and what they should do about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if a marketer could step up and take on this visionary marketing profile, it's fulfilling for the marketers I mentioned, but more importantly, huge payoff for the company. And the company gets a growth engine and an unrealized asset that they've never leveraged before. And then I think the third is, as you can imagine, and most importantly, there's going to be a payoff for the customer. If the marketer operates in a visionary marketing way, if the company embraces this and is able to make some of these shifts along with marketing, then the customer, at the end of the day, will experience a different company, a different brand, a different go-to-market approach, and, you know, an experience that they would have sworn that they designed themselves.
Absolutely.
And that's kind of nirvana.
Excellent, excellent. Scott, I want to thank you not only for sharing your time with us, but also just the phenomenal insights that you've shared with us today through the podcast interview and through the shift on how marketers can transform themselves from being tactical experts into true corporate growth leaders. Now, I thoroughly enjoyed the shift, and I really appreciated the real-life examples, the diverse CMO insights, and then the Monday morning actions that give the reader a clear starting point from which they can then become a growth-oriented leader. So I'd highly recommend The Shift to all of our listeners. I'm going to encourage them to pick up a copy for themselves, and we'll have links on the website to help them do just that. So thank you very much for joining us.
And thank you, Nathan, for the opportunity.
And that concludes our series. Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast. I would like to personally thank Scott Davis for being with us today and sharing his insights on making the shift from tactical marketer to corporate growth leader. As always, we would appreciate receiving your feedback by email at podcast@strategydriven.com. If you enjoyed the show, please consider voting for us on Podcast Alley and visiting our website at www.strategydriven.com. You can find more information about Scott Davis and The Shift via the several hyperlinks located on the Strategy Driven website. Until next time, so long.